This week on RSBNB Update, as Double XP Live goes on, we have a new construction item, the portable workbench. We look at how it works and whether it should have been added. Also, alchemical Hydrix jewelry is on the way, and we theorize how these powerful new items may be used. This is RSBNB Update, episode 790, recorded Thursday, August 13th, 2020. In Timbo we trust. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tannis and myself are here this week. You're back from your mini vacation that, I don't know, it didn't sound like you said it was very relaxing.
You know, I'm back, but number one, it is not a vacation when you take a child. It's a family trip. I forgot that. I was reminded.
I guess you could talk a bit about that in the What Have We Been Doing section of the show this week.
Yeah.
We're here back, and, you know, we're just kind of taking a bit of a slow week here before we ramp things up. I can say next week we will, of course, be discussing the new alchemical Hydrix jewelry. We're going to try and get David on the podcast for that, and then a couple weeks after that we'll have the Everlight lore special, which should be some good fun. So lots of fun RSBNB update going forward. We just got off the call recording another bit with Skater Dan from Clan Quest. Very good episode about old school RuneScape. Yes, we finally talked about old school, but I'll talk more about what that entailed in just a bit. But if you're joining us for the first time, you can find me in game at Shane12088, and he's in game at Tannis79. So this week, patch week, but Double XP Live is also happening, and we got the construction update that everybody's wanted. You can train construction anywhere now, outside of your player-owned house, with the portable workbench.
Yeah, but how do you think that makes our servant feel? He's out of a job now. He ain't got nowhere to go. We don't have to have his bed no more. I mean, what about all the mechanized monkeys out there running around with brain gear on their head? I mean, what are we going to do with all these poor out-of-work demons and monkeys?
Ask Michael Jackson about that.
Oh, no.
And, you know, it's really odd because we actually just discussed this in the old school bit about how there's content in old school RuneScape that is a construction rework. But lo and behold, here this week, people have been wanting for a while the ability to train construction anywhere, and we get the portable workbench. It's available on Treasure Hunter. It's not available from the skilling packs on Treasure Hunter. It's just on Treasure Hunter as it is, and it can be put down anywhere you put down the rest of your portables. Runs for 5 minutes. You could add more to it to extend its time, as is the tradition with portables in RuneScape. It's perk is that it gives an extra 10% XP when creating flat-packed items, and it offers an additional chance to save a plank upon use.
Oh, good.
And
it is nice, right, that now there's a construction portable, because the construction portable we had basically was just a sawmill, and it just cut the planks.
Cut the logs, yeah.
You mean, which, you know, that's nice and all, but, like, this way better. Like, this brings it in line. The only thing is, does that mean, like, where does that leave our house? Like, once you start taking the things away that we trained in it, where is that going to leave it?
Right. And
stand and an altar?
and you know what the funny part is? I wasn't intending on doing this, but I have a stack of, like, 3,000 plus mahogany planks in my inventory, with Double XP Weekend sitting here.
Yeah, dude, you gotta get on that.
And Protean planks just sitting there. With
Ooh,
this,
those are the best.
I might as well just train construction.
Big fat stack of proteins and a portable. Oh,
you're supposed to call them Protean.
Oh,
Protean, according to Earth last week.
Well, he's a hillbilly. I ain't listening to how you're supposed to pronounce things.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a hillbilly, though. I'm a bigger hillbilly.
I like this update. And I realize there are people out there who are going to say you like a Treasure Hunter update, and that's bad. But for some reason, I like this update. How do you feel about it?
I mean, I like this update, too.
Like, you can buy them on the Grand Exchange, so it's not necessarily pay to win. And it's 10%.
No. I think it's a good update. I don't think it's any different than any of the other portable items, you know, that we have. Am I guilty of liking a Treasure Hunter update? Yeah. And I'll tell you what, as I'm making my flat packs, I'll also be kicking off some agility in my boots. I love Treasure Hunter updates. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just not buying into that side of things. I think it's good.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to work with the cards that you're dealt, right? And that's the way I see this. Yes?
200 mil construction is going to take a long time.
Exactly.
Man.
And, well, it would be nice to talk about, hey, what are we going to do for a construction update? I think it's been said before that, you know, you do a construction update in-game that takes a substantial amount of resources. And if you were going to do that, you'd need to basically rebuild the entire player-owned house mechanism as we have it right now. Which, as it would be rebuilding the entire construction skill. Which, under the best of circumstances, when they built this back in 2006, took about 18 months.
I'm willing to wait and make that sacrifice. I would like to see that. That's why, like, it's hard. I find it hard to call this a construction update. This
right.
is a portable. It's another training method.
And,
that's
and to
fine.
Be fair, I opened with calling it a construction update because that's what the social media side has been calling it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What's that, how's that expression go? You put lipstick on a pig, but she's still a pig, man.
And it's a Treasure Hunter update in actuality with this. And, you know, it's not overpowered. It's not the next version of Smoldering Lamps. It's not Cinder Cores combined with that and so on and so forth.
Dude, it's just another, like, it's just a range. It's a well. It's a crafter. It's a Fletcher. It's the same exact thing.
The world is not ending from this. if anything, I think it could be used in a way, if you frame this properly, and folks out there who take issue with this, take note that if you frame this properly, you could use this as a way to build your own next construction update. And I'm not just being funny the way I put that. I literally mean that, in that if there's such a huge push out there that people want a new construction update to train construction outside of your POH, let Jagex know about this. Show them what a success these portable workbenches are. Make this the most used portable on this last weekend of Double XP Live.
Oh, but we have been doing that. I mean, to be fair, the community has been asking for a construction update. Pretty steady.
Yeah.
It's always up there. So, I think it's just, I don't know. Right now, they can't take on the big projects anyway. So, it's all kind of it's all kind of wishing.
Yeah, and, I mean, I just want to address before we move on to the live stream that it is bad optics to launch your in-game news this week, a new update, and have it be a Treasure Hunter item. As much as we like it here, I will admit that that is bad optics.
Oh, yeah. No, that doesn't... that doesn't look good. And it will especially... Look, the reason it doesn't look good is because we do have a Double XP weekend going on right now.
Yes.
And it is available on Treasure Hunter, right? Now, does it make sense for them? Well, of course it does, right? But I probably wouldn't have called it that. I would have framed it in another way. Because I'm not going to blame them. This is the time that you're... I mean, if you're going to release it, then you might as well promote it, right? But it don't look good.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's just another portable. It's not going to, you know, massively change the way you train, because, you know, it's still going to be faster to go in and make those flotsam prod brokers. So,
well, that's going to be your best XP rate. Yeah. That's also going to be your most intense training. This is going to be slightly less. Probably, I'm assuming, what, mahogany tables would still probably be the best this way. But what it is doing is cutting out the cost and just the tediousness of your servant and having to be at your house. Other than those two things, it's really not changing anything. And how much do you really spend on your servant? I mean, I know I've sent him back to school and all three of his kids to college, but, I mean, in the long run, how much did I really spend, you know?
Yeah,
I don't even think you spend any money on the monkey.
And of course, remember also the flat pack depacker.
Oh, forgot about that.
That would automatically note your flat packs when you create them.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
So there's a way you can kind of combine that up and, you know, further the XP training with this method. The flat pack depacker does only have 60 charges to make. Crafting one requires 20 crafted parts, 20 head parts, and 2 sharp components.
Oh, so those are super cheap to make. And
Yeah, and they're not tradable.
Oh, okay. But still, I mean, that's like, so that's every 2 inventories, essentially.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, that's nice.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're standing next to a bank, maybe you don't need that.
Yeah, I mean, you would be standing next to a bank on the portable, so I'm not sure. Maybe not.
But there is also the side effect that the flat pack depacker has a note that'll allow you to automatically disassemble your flat packs too.
I mean, that might be worth it if you're. I'm not exactly sure what those are going to break down.
Yeah.
Too,
so mahogany dining table, flat pack, just simple and crafted parts.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Anyways, folks, that's that. I want to move on to the live stream because the live stream was the fun part this week. A new reveal of an update coming next Tuesday. I don't know if it's a bank holiday or there what on Monday that explains why it would be on Tuesday instead of Monday, but that's when it's going to arrive. Mod Warden was on this live stream along with Mods Timbo and Ryan with Mod Porky hosting, and this content, as put by Mod Warden, is the first piece of new content that they're releasing with their new development approach that started after the pandemic began. And I want to go through some of the language that was used by Mod Warden in this, because it was a very interesting live stream, because, you know, when you pull these people together, you know, something big's going to happen when you put Mod Warden on, the executive producer. He said that, and these are his exact words, he says, "We're hot off the heels of an awesome, awesome July. We brought out Desperate Measures, had a fantastic beach event. I know there were some naysayers, but it was very well executed with very high engagement, and there have been a couple of great ninja deliveries," and so on. We're going to get to the alchemical Hydrix jewelry, but what do you notice about that sentence?
It sounds exactly like what I talked about in my article.
Yeah.
That this is what we're looking at. We're looking at one headlining update in the month, a couple of patch weeks, a ninja strike, and possibly a live ops update. That's exactly what he said. And not only did he say it, but he's conditioning us and trying to get people excited instead of looking at it like, oh, well, yeah, dude, but that's 3 weeks out of the month with patches, right? No. Saying, hey, we got great quests, got some good patch weeks, and a ninja strike. So he's like trying to get us to buy in, you know? And I think it's basically going to be up to us now to decide if that's what we're happy with or not, right?
Yeah, and I think what needs to happen is, I think we would be having a different discussion entirely if you gave him the entire hour to talk about this, because the language that he uses here, sure, yes, you can pass that off as marketing speak, but when you talk like that and you work it into everything that you're talking about, that's a different way of speaking that is tailored in a way to build persuasion towards the people that you're trying to talk to. In this case, the player base that has been expecting week-to-week updates but has quite honestly gotten something else entirely on that. Which, at the end of the day, I think is a good thing because we need to move that direction, right?
Yeah. Despite everything that I thought, despite every indication, I don't think we're going to be returning to the really large stuff for a while. And I really see that what he described in July is the model going forward.
Yeah, and he called it in particular, this is the beginning of their second half of the year roadmap. And as things move forward, the updates they put out will get bigger and bigger and more important.
Well, okay. We'll take those as they come.
Yeah, we gotta move slowly on this. Also recapped at the very beginning that the Orthon dig site is being worked on. And that the September update deals with the anniversary of a specific piece of content. We'll get more into what that exactly is later. It was revealed at the tail end of the live stream. He reiterated that they're trying hard to crack out another quest by the end of the year. They're not 100% confident yet that it'll be able to be done, but they're very optimistic and they're very hopeful on that. And he is aiming to get their, quote, batting average up. And, you know, for me, I say, whenever Mod Warden comes on the stream and shows his face, that's a good sign. And those are his actual own words with that, too.
Yeah, so. No, I definitely think that's a good thing. We needed something from the top just to kind of let us know for sure what the score is. You know, like, yes, I could see it. We do this week in, week out. For people that, you know, they're a lot more casual, I think it's good to see Mod Warden come out and be like, look, not every week is going to be a new quest or a new boss. You might get that probably once a month. But these other updates we're going to say, or these, you know, smaller things, we're calling them updates, bud. they're updates. And so that's, you know, you take that or leave it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get into the alchemical hydrix then, because, you know, this is a big reveal in terms of pushing jewelry forward on this. The alchemical hydrix gem is going to be made with 117 invention, a hydrix. And are you ready for this part? This is where it gets really, really shocking. 50 fortunate, 50 refined, 10 precious, and 2 rumbling components.
Gonna be an expensive.
Yeah.
Expensive item.
Yeah, so just talk about the way this works. First things first, you purchase the incomplete hydrix with Reaper points. You combine it with an onyx to get it an uncut hydrix. You cut that up, and then this factors into this alchemical hydrix. But I want to talk about the rumbling components because, you know,
aren't those like those are real high?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're talking tectonic, tempest,
tectonic,
primeval,
yeah,
and Terralith armor, as well as Drygor weaponry and seismic wands and singularities, including the perfect Chidon, Calphite Defender, Calphite Rebounder, and the Calphite Repriser, as well as the Inquisitor's Staff and the Inquisitor's Rod. Oh, and the Spear of Annihilation can also give rumbling components.
Hmm. Well, yeah, those are some expensive components.
So let's say you try and disassemble your Drygor Mace. In terms of the components that you're going to get from that, Apparently you don't get those from there. Let's see. I got to actually get the full list here of where these come from. They say Draugr weaponry, but it doesn't say. I got to pull up the exact list here for rumbling components. Yeah, Draugr maces do. Okay. So we're going to be spending a lot of money if we want to get these on day one.
Yeah.
And this is where I talk about the fact, actually, I'll just say that you're going to see this trend later, but I think that in addition to providing utility for the players in terms of the jewelry that they're releasing, this is yet another high-end PVM item sync, which we've said is needed because, you know, people are just killing the same bosses over and over and over again.
And okay, so that's true. And then, but you guys think about what is it being released with? So we think it's a PV. It's more of a PVM and update because that's the only piece of jewelry that people really seem to be interested in, right?
Right.
And with it being this expensive, they're the only people, one, that would want to pay that. It's the only thing that makes sense to pay that, right? Because
right.
they're going to get a return. But when you look at some of the other pieces, why would you ever spend that kind of money? And it almost makes them obsolete before they come out.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. They are releasing the brooch, which requires 97 crafting, the alchemical hydrix, 5 elder rune bars, and 5 gold leaves. This is the skilling item. And the essence of finality, which is the combat item, which requires the alchemical hydrix, an amulet of souls, and the reaper necklace, both of them.
So, I mean, you're going to have to do some serious bossing to even get that item, but it's...
The Reaper necklace is made from Hydrix.
Yeah, well, all of them.
Yeah, and as is the Amulet of Souls, so... you know, very high entry cost on that. But let's talk about what happens with this. So, the essence of finality has the effect of both the Amulet of Souls and the Reaper necklace combined into one. In addition, it can also consume a special attack weapon and cast that special attack without the casting weapon being wielded. So the simple example with this is that this gives you that dragon dagger special attack that you've always wanted to use at endgame that is horribly outdated because it's tier 60 content, and you can use that with this at, you know, with your tier 90 gear if you wanted to. I don't know if you would want to, but you definitely could. Well,
you know what's interesting, though, is a lot of the newer weapons, the 88s, the 90s, 92s, they all have special, you know.
Special attacks, yeah.
Yeah, special attacks. And so, like, it's going to get interesting.
Yeah, the example they gave on stream was that if you use a Saren God bow, it will be stored within that amulet, and there will be no way, I repeat this, no way whatsoever to get that weapon back. This weapon is destroyed when you use it. Now,
I forgot it takes a weapon, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is only for the highest of the high.
Exactly. But if you want to have multiple, you can have multiple of them. So if you want one, you know, to be the Saren God bow, or if you were doing Malia on the other side and you want one to be the Zaro's God sword, you can do that as well, and you can have multiple Essence of Finalities in your bank. And you
What's
can switch
happen,
them as
Shane?
Well. You can
What's
switch them in combat.
When, okay, by itself, let's say by itself, its effect is not overpowered. That it takes enough out of the economy, it does enough good that it's, you know, it's balanced. It's not really overpowered. But what happens if you have, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 or 6 of those in your inventory, and now you have access to a bunch of different specials that was never intended for you to have. So, in of itself, it's balanced. But then, in combination, how are they going to address that if it becomes a problem like I think it could?
Yeah, and, you know, that's what we're going to have a chat with David about next week after it comes out, to see how he can wind up exploiting this. And I use that in a very positive light. I'm not too concerned because it's a Mod Timbo update, and his updates he puts out on this same kind of vein are normally pretty good.
That's true.
In Mod Timbo,
we trust.
I wonder
if there's like a limit. I wonder if there's a cooldown to it.
It would be this typical special attack cooldown. Yeah.
Well, we'll leave it to the experts until we see.
Yeah.
See what happens, I guess.
And I mean, we can go through the list of special attacks here if you wanted to talk about ones that might be interesting. It's also worth noting that if you are using a ranged special attack, you need to be using a ranged weapon. So you can't be using a scythe and have access to a ranged special attack. Or you can't be using a Saren Godbow and have access to a melee special attack.
Well, you sure could with the switch, though, couldn't you?
You could. Could. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Anyways, weapons that might be interesting to use. Darklight? Perhaps?
You know, I love me some Darklight, but why?
I don't know. Reduce their attack strength and defense, because it's doubled. Another one?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for demon bosses, that makes a whole lot of sense. The Granite Maul. Deals an instant strike, being capable of being used multiple times in one tick, ignoring the global cooldown.
I was thinking more like along the lines of, you know, like the Scythe's Mirror Bat. And
oh yeah, you could definitely
like
use that
92,
one as
well. What's the God Sword?
Zaro's God Sword.
Oh yeah. That has a heller special on it, doesn't it?
Another interesting one would be the Stadius Warhammers, which
those are good.
Smash
those
your
are
opponents,
really good.
Lowers their defense by 30%, applies a debuff that increases the target's affinity values by 5, and this is similar to the Vesta Longsword special, which increases damage near its mean by 145%.
Yeah.
Clusters damage near
those
its mean,
good.
Rather.
Those would be real good.
If you're wanting to go legacy side, Dragon Claws, perhaps. I don't know how that would turn out. And it's worth noting that all these special attacks will scale up to the weapon that you're using. So if you're using a tier 92, the damage from these claws will scale up to that level.
Oh, it will?
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, it will.
Oh, because I was thinking, I'm like, well, wait a minute. Once you've married the jewelry with the item, like, you're done, right? And I'm not wasting $100-some million piece of jewelry on a freaking dragon claw. Like, come
right?
on. You know?
Yeah.
But that's interesting that it scales. That actually could make some of these
older ones more useful.
It might. I mean, I don't know. It may, maybe it don't, but I'm really curious to see what the PBM community will do with it and what they can come up with.
Saradomin Godsword?
You know, there's so much healing, though. Do you need more?
Probably not. But, I mean, it'd be a nice vanity thing to have.
Yeah. I mean,
Eldritch Crossbow.
Yes.
Causes Soul Split Curse to heal instead of damage the player for 4 times the amount of life points it would have healed. Or instead of healing, it damages your target. Sorry.
Pretty interesting.
That one is interesting.
What's Hex Hunter have?
Hex Hunter. Where are you? Let me look that up. Hex Hunter does not have a special.
Really? Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, I guess this is special enough.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you have it. It talks. There's many things you could do with this. Another interesting one might be the one from Ivan's staff. deals 100 to 250% spell damage. Which would, in theory, I think, probably be like another threshold ability for 25% adrenaline.
Yeah, sounds right.
And you could use that with wands. So there's lots of different choices here, as you can see. It's just a question of, you know, figuring out if you want to sink the money into them. And that's why, you know, I want to have a chat with David next week to see which ones he feels is going to, you know, be the best to do after getting his hands on them. But let's see, what else was there? The amulet itself degrades at the same rate as regular Hydrix, requires alchemical Hydrix to dust to recharge. One Hydrix dust is equal to 20% charge, so you need five alchemical Hydrix dust to charge it. So half of a alchemical Hydrix recharges the amulet in total.
Okay.
Now, they were asked, what were the goals for the project? They said that the ultimate goal was to make an item worthy of alchemical Hydrix, mainly because of the value that is put into this gem. Which, you know, you can see that right there. In addition to everything else we talked about, this will be the best-in-slot amulet for combat. Has strength, ranged, and magic bonuses of 56 and a prayer bonus of 7. So it's pretty flashy with that.
It's iced out. I said it's iced out.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, just to circle back to that, it will require an alchemical Hydrix dust to recharge it. One dust is equal to 20%, and you get 10 dust from one alchemical Hydrix, so you need half of an alchemical Hydrix to recharge this thing as it ticks down. So there we have it. I'm going to be interested to see what happens with this when it arrives. But I think we can move on to the skilling one right now, which is the brooch. Because I wonder.
Stepchild.
Hmm?
So the redheaded stepchild.
You think? I don't know.
I mean, this is where I'm at, dude. It's nice. Is it the amount of money that we're going to have to pay nice? Oh, I don't think so. I mean, this isn't a Grace of the Elves, you know what I mean? Like, that was like, you're like, oh, boom, yes, I want that, I need that. But I'm afraid that the price, because of the PVM side, is going to be so high. What's the douche? Let's tell the people.
Well, when you enchant it, it becomes what they're calling the Brooch of the Gods. It will store up to 1,000 of each decorated urn, that decorated urn R, which I think is the version that has the rune on it. And it will take an urn from the brooch and start one whenever needed. Also now, urns will magically transport themselves to your backpack if you already had a stored urn in your bank that was already underway. With this. So this is a bit of an urn quality of life update as well in this here. In addition to that, though, it has the ability to double the chance for your portable skilling station effects to activate, which, you know, it kind of makes sense. They're releasing this after Double XP Live because you don't want to introduce something like this into Double XP Live, I think, right? So, also skill distraction effects are enhanced, and what this means, these are things like Rockertunities, Time Sprites, Bird's Nests, and Deep Sea Fishing, so that the effect from those will be buffed. And, you know, I think they're modest buffs. It's nothing that's, I think, going to be too concerning on that front.
Concerning, but it's not even in the same... It's not even in the same category as the PVM jewelry. It's not in the same wheelhouse.
Yeah. And I wonder if the next perk of this would help. You know, occasionally receives what's called a blessing from the gods when using non-combat skills, which can be captured for invention components.
I mean, but that... That's like a Saren Sprite, right? And we know what those are. Those are nice.
You'll receive four components of a type of Uncommon Plus.
Well, I mean, that's better. But when you take it as a whole, they're all things that are, like, nice. But they're none of them are something that you're going to really want to pay for. I mean, you can stack urns in your inventory, right? Like, don't stack. So, this is different, whereas the PVM jewelry, like, that is best in slot. You need to get that necklace if you want best in slot. I don't feel like that we're in the same, on the skilling side.
Yeah, we'll yeah. I mean, it's going to be a question of how often it activates, because, you know, uncommon and rare and very rare components are going to be rarer with this. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to be getting free rumbling components from this or anything to that effect.
Right. I don't know.
I don't understand the invention side of it. Like, what was the choice?
There doesn't seem to be any. There's no, like,
to give invention components behind it. Right. And, I mean, sure, invention components might help an Iron Man, right? Like, that's the use case. That's the first use case I see for this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would help an Iron Man. You know, this came out after, like, skilling offhands, and it increased your overall XP by 5%. Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we might have something to talk about.
So, in addition, I just want to talk about those skilling distraction effects that they talked about. Artisan Workshop Pipes will give an extra 20% XP. Ceremonial Swords will give an extra 20% XP. Deep Sea Fishing Distractions will give an extra 20% XP. Capturing Chronicle Fragments will give 20% extra XP. You have a 20% chance of getting Bird's Nests. 20% more rewards from Fire Spirits. Rockertunities will have their multiplier added to by 1. And Sprite Focus will have a multiplier of plus 1 at 100%. So at the tail end, assuming you have, I think, what it was, a 102 Archaeology, you'll get a times 6 precision boost at 100% Sprite Focus.
I mean, like I said, like, all these things are...
They would be nice, but you don't need to have them.
And not you can, I can't justify the cost. You know what I mean? Like, that's the problem I'm having. Like, the effects are nice. There's nothing wrong with the effects. The effects are nice. But when it's in the same category as a PVM ring that's been best in slot, and it costs rumbling components and 50 force unit components, I mean, come on. That's pretty high price. It's pretty costly.
Yeah. The precious components are things like your Amulet of Fury, Amulet of Glory, so those kind of gems. But those rumbling components, I mean, eesh.
Yeah. Right? Ouch.
And they said they put it...
do Calphite King again.
And they said they put this in the pocket slot because they didn't want to distract from the use of the Grace of the Elves.
I guess that's...
So this will be a pocket item.
That's cool. Yeah, otherwise they would have had to put the Porter function on it as well, which actually would have made it better.
Yeah.
Didn't need it because of Grace of the Elves.
Looking at the calculator for the rumbling components here, looks like the cheapest rumbling component that you're going to get would come from Augmented Acto or just buying Primeval boots or gloves, for example, would give you a guaranteed shot at 5 rumbling components. And that puts the price...
You can't even buy that, though, can you? You can't buy that. That's from the raids.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, you're right. You can't buy them. Well, let's go through this list then and find the first rumbling component you can buy then. We know it's not Acto, right? Uh see. Drygor Longsword. Yes, so that's the cheapest one that you can buy that's not augmented, and that's 6 million per Rumbling Component.
Ain't cheap.
And then the price shoots up drastically from there.
And I'm telling you, come Monday, you ain't gonna, that Drygor's gonna be going up.
Yeah, and I mean, in theory, if you wanted to, you could bring that price down. You can get 20 Rumbling Components if you augmented, say, a Drygor Longsword and brought it up to item level 20 and then disassembled it. You get 20, or sorry, item level 9, you get 20 Rumbling Components from that.
That's not so bad.
No, it's not.
That's not so bad. That makes it
easier it to get, and it's 100% chance. And that's why I said I think this is a way of taking items out of the game more, both in the terms of these raid items and the Kalthite King items. Then on the other side, you know, the Telos items that people are definitely going to be putting into the finality. So I think that more than providing the utility of these items, it's more about taking items out of the game.
That would be my guess. That only works if you make it appealing enough to for people.
And
to
Best in Slot does that.
Out of the game.
Best yeah. in Slot does yeah. that.
No, of course.
I think we should learn to do the Kalthite King this weekend.
You know, it's not really that bad if you got one person that knows how to like tank correctly.
Yeah.
It's not all that bad. I've done it before in a group.
Well, there you go. There you go.
It's like 5 of us, I think. So,
it's
yeah.
just like that time that Obama told everyone to learn to code.
Well, did you learn to code, Shane?
Oh, I knew how to do that before he told me to.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's see. What else was there from the live stream? Warden said he asked the team for a headliner. And this was what they had to start off small, and they're going to ramp up into something bigger. They're doing this to form the habit and cadence rather than waiting for bigger and bigger and fewer and fewer and further between update launches, and they aim to deliver content more regularly with this. And that's more of that language right there, right? Bigger and fewer, further and further between. Fewer and further between, so to speak. That tells me that Mod Warden is very deliberately choosing his words that he says on this live stream, which is very interesting to me.
It's deliberate because, see, this is where the road. So he knows what they are capable of, what they can produce, and what they are capable of, what they can produce. It's different from what the community's perception is from what they should be able to produce. Community wants content updates every week. Mod Warden knows you can't do content updates like what everyone wants each week.
And even in our old school bit, we learned that, no, it's not content updates every week.
Right. So he's being very deliberate in trying to... I guess use just the right words to bring people along, right? Like, because like that's something that I've always said. Like, that is why I thought we might be going back to a different kind of thing. Because when the rubber meets the road, you just can't have everything. Like, there's just you can't have everything you want. And I think that's what he's doing now. You know, he's kind of
priming the community for it.
Yes.
And, you know, I feel personally that this is the best release cycle to have. Because we've kind of been in the swing of things since last year of, you know, filling in around that. And for us, I don't mind that, actually. One headline.
It gives you something to, you know, it
gives
us
something
to
focus the show on. And then in the remaining weeks, we're able to, you know, kind of diverge and move away from that and, you know, experiment with other things. And we haven't gone public with this yet, but we're looking for, you know, other things that we can do to theme the RSBNB update weeks, because we really enjoy doing that with archaeology.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I don't mind talking on, I mean, I kind of like digging into Ninja Strike weeks, because so many quality of life changes come with those, and those really makes a difference. I know they're not exciting. You know what I mean? Like, I know that this isn't the exciting stuff, but boy, it adds up and makes a difference in your overall gameplay.
Yeah. September anniversary update. Mod Warden always likes good distractions, he says. So that effectively confirms that the September anniversary update they were talking about from 10 years ago will be something to do with distractions and diversions. Or 12 years ago.
Like a new kingdom or something. Not a new kingdom, but maybe... I don't know. I've been a slumlord for a really long time. I could... maybe I needed like a property manager that could go take care of my chores or something. I don't know.
Well, let's not put our hopes too high on that one. The original distractions and diversions in September of 2008 were the circus, Balthazar's Big Top Bonanza, Penguin Hide and Seek, and the Shooting Star.
It'll be we always get the raffle in September, so it'll probably be Balthazar.
So it'll be a revamped Balthazar's Penguin Hide and Seek fixes and changes to the Shooting Star to make them more viable with the mining and smithing rework.
Oh, it's all of those.
Yeah, that was the distraction and diversion update 12 years ago.
Oh. Okay, so it could touch all of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's kind of what we predicted it would be, something about distraction and diversion, because that's really the only thing that made sense back then. And in closing, Mod Warden said that God Wars Dungeon 3 is in development. They're not moving away from a weekly release, and they're hoping to have a nice showing for Halloween and Christmas.
We're not moving away from that weekly release, guys. But you're going to have to accept that I'm going to call it different things, and you're going to have to call those updates. Just saying.
Yeah.
A rose by any other name. Is it still a rose?
There you go. There you go. I don't know. Like, we're going to wait to next week to figure out just how broken this is. And I bet by the time we're hearing this, David will probably have, you know, three or four of these essences of finality or whatever it's being called.
Oh,
again.
Yeah. You know it. You know it.
But... at this point, I think we can move on to the patch notes, because that's it for the live stream this week. And, you know, it's a very consequential live stream at that. So, all right. Patch notes this week. Another section of the update that was kind of lacking this week, but I think there were still some good ones, right? So let's have a look.
Crossbow was nice.
Yeah, starting off... filter icons in the powers interface will now remain in the same position across all three tabs on mobile, which is good. You don't want those kind of things moving around. The chat box will now correctly open when the first message is received, and players can now place objects into the aquarium planning interface on mobile. Everybody loves the aquarium.
Oh, it's just a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Farming and herb lore, players are now unable to search for dinosaur eggs in the Grand Exchange. And Ripper dinosaur eggs can now be used and converted into dinosaurs. And, you know, being the farming and herb lore person, I don't exactly get what this means.
I'm like, wait a minute. I'm so confused right now. Like, so you can't...
I mean,
was it allowing a non... those are non-tradable. I don't.
You're supposed to be able to trade unchecked versions.
But those are animals. They're not eggs, are they?
Oh, you're right. You're right. They are animals, not eggs.
That's why I'm so confused. I'm like,
yeah, and that's why I, you know, really didn't get this on here. But anyways. Silverhawk feathers can now be used directly on Silverhawk boots to charge them.
Oh, nice.
Animation has been added when feathering dart tips. The door in the cooking guild can now be left open when you're standing next to the ranged. Next to the range, not ranged. Congealed blood now drops at the same time as other drops when killing gargoyles, which is part of that whole Mauritania bit that was used to create the sigils in the slot that was removed last year. Calgarian demons slain inside the Shadow Reef now count towards demon cluster assignments.
Oh.
And this is why I mentioned the Darklight special earlier.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But I was like, where is he going? Like, it's for demons. Let's see.
And then I was thinking this would also work on the Calgarian demon, which are kind of a pain to fight. I mean, if you wanted to put that kind of money into it. The scan interface opened from the old necklace will now close upon banking the item. Which I think is some obscure quest item. I'm not 100% sure on that. Feral vampires are now a bit less feral and will no longer attack the player as soon as they arrive after using the fairy ring network. That's good. Certain interfaces, including the smithing interface and treasure hunter, now scale properly while resizing the window with legacy interface mode enabled. Good. Anytime we talk about interface scaling in some regards, I'm happy. Fixed an issue that caused graphical stretching when combining the Firestorm Blade offhand override and the Revenant Walk override. You know, you got to admire these people who go out there and they put all these weird combinations together and they find a graphical glitch like this.
Yeah, that's for sure.
The heated tea flask will no longer remain visible while smithing, and this is, of course, a treasure hunter item that gives you infinite tea. Kaiga's journal pages will no longer act as the journal itself if picked up by a pet. And I'm assuming this means like legendary pet or something to that effect. Now here's one that deals with this week's primary update. Constructing flat packs with protein planks will now correctly consider how much inventory space is left. Next, the Greenman's Ale temporary boost has been changed from +3 to +2 or +1, depending on it. I wonder when this got changed to a +3, because it was always +2 or +1, I think, right? For Greenman's Ale.
What I thought.
But... yeah. Using the Juju Hunter Flask on the Red Vine Blossom will no longer require players to relog before spawning Draconic Jadinkos. And that's it for the patch notes this week that I wanted to highlight here. So, overall, just some good general fixes here that, I don't think these are anything in general that people would want to write home about, but there's definitely some good ones in here all around.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I missed one at the end of the doc here. The Strike Bow Special Attack will now deal the full 12.5% of damage stored instead of 9%. So, another special attack that we were, of course, talking about. So that's patch notes, and that's it for RS content for the week. It's a pretty quiet week, all things considered, but I think I'm going to be regretting saying that.
Next week?
No, until we get to the double XP achievements part of the show. Because, you know, there's a lot of those.
Yeah. I ain't been quiet for a lot of them. News is quiet. The game is busy.
Yeah, that's what they say. But just wait till we get to tech news. But before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters who have made this episode possible. This week, I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jade W, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Samantha R, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zant, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us. And in case you're wondering what all this is about, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and there you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. You'll gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the one that we just recorded with Dan from Clan Quest about old school RuneScape. We went all into the origin of old school. We talked about the community. We talked about its unique updates and what it means for RuneScape as a whole. And, you know, there's more than that, too. We also, of course, have Inside Update, which we just published last week, a bit of an interview with Diana. And we'll, of course, be doing our roundtable this Saturday at 8 p.m. game time or 4 p.m. Eastern in Discord. So Patreon members are encouraged to come along and talk with us and chat as we play RuneScape and just have a general chat about what we've been up to. I imagine we'll be discussing some double XP stuff, maybe some old school stuff, and probably some desperate measures as well. So you gain access to that and movie night and so much more for just $1 a month. But if you want to take it one step further, you can contribute $3 a month and you'll get a special VIP rank, including a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And we also do have a $5 tier where you get a shout-out each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to form the clip show at the end of the year, in addition to everything else that we've mentioned. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, or if you just want to support your favorite podcast, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. Tech news. Tech news. Tech news. Free Fortnite. Free Fortnite. That's the tone that we're hearing today in all things, in a message posted on the Fortnite developer blogs. We have this post with the hashtag Free Fortnite because Apple has banned Fortnite from the Apple App Store, as they say, removing everybody's ability to install and update the game on iOS devices while instructing Epic to remove the Epic Direct Payment feature. And the folks who make Fortnite say Apple is keeping prices high so they can collect 30% of your payments and is blocking Fortnite in order to prevent Epic from passing on the savings from direct payments to you. They want you to join the fight against the App Store on social media with the Free Fortnite tag. And the whole reason that this came about, it wasn't just some arbitrary decision that's been made. Oh my! Guess what? They've also been kicked off the Google Play Store. I'm sorry, I shouldn't find that funny, but I just do.
But you're taking an awfully big cut. I mean, how does Apple justify 30%?
That's the price of the App Store, but let me just talk about what brought this forward. They brought out what they're calling the Fortnite Mega Drop, permanent discounts of up to 20%. And with this, they started selling something called V-Bucks, or which is their currency that you can use for this, and they discounted it. And in addition to this, they brought out a feature called Epic Direct Payment, which is a way to pay directly to Epic without going through the Apple App Store. And they say that, you know, if you use Epic Direct Payment, it would cost you $7.99, whereas with the App Store, it would be $9.99. And same thing on the Google Play Store. And they're framing this as a way of saving money for the end user at the end of the day. And I have two ways of viewing this. One, I absolutely, you know, despise the business tactics of Epic and their CEO, Tim Sweeney, with this, in terms of some of the things that we've talked about with indie games and how Epic, you know, collects the entirety of the rights to those games when they show up on the Epic Game Store. But on the other hand, this is the first big challenge that these app stores have seen like this. And, you know, this was entirely planned to provoke Apple and Google, because you don't start off a campaign, as they're calling it, Free Fortnite, by putting together a, you know, 45-second-long video that they produced called 1980 Fortnite. You know, this was a direct shot across the bow of Google and Apple in order to get them to ban them and force their hand and push this discussion of, you know, what is ultimately going to be viewed in the courts, I think, as an antitrust case in this case, in the case of Apple and Google.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, why didn't they do this 2 weeks ago when they were all hauled in? I mean, that would have been better timing, right? Like, this would have blown up while they were testifying in front of Congress. It would have been big time news.
Yeah. But here's the thing. When you go onto the Apple App Store or Google Play, you sign a contract agreeing to these terms. And specifically, you say that if you break this contract, you are liable to be removed from the App Store. So the people at Epic knew exactly what they were doing with this, and they had it coming to them. They were going to get removed for doing this, for going around the App Store like that. And you can say it's anti-competitive, but if it's Apple and Google who are doing this, it's just an industry standard at that point, I think. And you're in effect...
Two companies don't justify... I mean, that's the problem. Two companies.
But you're also paying for the privilege to get onto these platforms, because otherwise you need to build an entire distribution mechanism and payment mechanism. There's lots of app developers out there who are very, very happy with the way this works, because all they need to do is once they finish their app, they just press a few buttons in Xcode or whatever it is on the Android side, and then Apple and Google handle the rest, minus the marketing.
I love a cut.
It is, and I mean, they're free to go around it and come up with their own payment system. But
how do you go around it if you have an Apple device? You can't just go get an app from the Google Store or something. Like, you can't. So
it's the price you got to pay to be on the platform.
Kind of, that's a little extorty, don't you think?
Well. Myself, having put an app on the Apple App Store in the past, I have the perspective of, you know, not having the payment system back end or the distribution back end, and it is a godsend for making it easier to get something out to thousands of people when in reality you would need to do all that grunt work in the process. So the point that I'm seeing this from is that you know what you're signing up for when you sign up for one of these app stores.
But, I mean, does that make it right? Like, you could say that about anything. Like, well, you know.
And if you don't want to be there, you don't need to agree to it.
But if it's your only choice, you don't have any choice.
Then you got to find a different way. Make a web app.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It seems a little greedy. I mean, it's great that it saves you work, but you're paying for that savings. Like, that's 30%. It's a lot. That's a lot of money.
It's what
that's more than your taxes.
It's what you have to pay for on that front. And, you know, you could look at things that have been more restrictive in the past. You know, when the App Store first came out, I think it was in 2008, there was thought that it might be a 50-50 cut. But at the time, when we were talking about this, the 70-30 breakdown was actually seen as very generous by Apple. And, you know, I don't know if you can necessarily even say that it's antitrust, because they're not preventing you, in effect, from publishing on there. Because there are technologies out there that allow you to run these things on a web browser. And the same thing has been said, I forget what the name of the service was, but this is the same thing, you know, that even Netflix does. But there was a new email client not too long ago that was, you know, back and forth in discussions with Apple on this. And they said one of the other things that you could do if you really wanted to with this, is you could just offer a free trial of the game. as a way of getting around something like this. So there are ways around it, and you know, the folks at Apple and Google, I assume, only having dealt with the Apple ones, are very helpful for people who want to get their applications on the App Store and who might have problems with this. So I'm going to be on the side of Apple on this one, honestly, because this was a decision made by the Fortnite people. But on the other hand, this is the biggest challenge that Apple's ever seen. So we'll have to see if there's any fallout from it.
Yeah, it's kind of like you can't get mad at something for doing what it's in its nature to do.
Right. And it's in the contract that you sign, in theory, to even get access to the Apple development tools.
For whatever reason, we said companies should do this and nothing else, and that's what it's doing.
And it's just ingrained in the way it works.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to change that, we got to change it somewhere else.
You got to change it wholesale in a different way, and the only way to do that would be a mass exodus from the app stores, which isn't going to happen. Because there's thousands of so many independent developers out there who are happy with this.
Well, you could do a regulation, too. You could say, no, 20%. Yeah, we think 20% is fair. You can have 20% Apple. I mean, lawmakers can do that if they chose to do that. I mean, they would never in this country. But you could.
Right. And the interesting part about that is that it would be incumbent on each country in order to do that. And then you're in a situation where you have silos of where certain apps are available.
It's a drawback.
Yeah. And, you know, there's precedent for things changing like this. Recently, Valve changed the way sales work on Steam. Previously, they used 70-30 as well. But they changed it so that that's the case for the first $10 million dollars in sale that a game publisher earns, but for all sales between $10 million and $50 million, it goes to a 25% split, and for every sale after $50 million, Steam will just take a 20% cut.
I wonder if that was from pressure from Epic, because they were offering so much more.
It was pressure from Epic that was doing that, yes.
I mean, really love them or hate them, they're shaking things up. I mean, they're definitely pushing the envelope. They are like a disruptive kind of technology at this point, right?
And, you know, I think the interesting part is going to be to see what Google has to say about this. And I think the only way you're going to, you know, raise alarm bells is if Google and Apple act in exactly the same way at the same time. Because then that would be seen as monopolistic and truly anti-competitive.
Right, but which is so funny because, I mean, that's what's going to happen anyway, right? Because what's in one's interest is in the other's. So why would it turn out any other way?
Right, and effectively what we're dealing with here is a big tech establishment.
Yes.
Of Apple, Google, Amazon, Twitter, Facebook. And that's why nothing came out of the antitrust hearings in the United States.
Oh, so, well, nothing came out of those because they passed out the campaign donations before they went into the meeting.
Shane. There you go.
You didn't know you could do that?
Go.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah, many people don't know that all these tech companies donate both equally almost to Republicans and Democrats. So.
Oh, yeah. Dude, all the – like, that's the secret. You donate – if you're rich, you donate to both. You hedge your bets. Like – nobody just donates to one. I mean, they're both for sale. Why wouldn't you buy both?
There you go. And that's the beauty of America. Everything's for sale if you have enough money.
If you call it beauty, I'll call it something after the show.
Well, we'll let the listeners decide if it's beauty or not, but I was just speaking in that context. Next piece of tech news, new conversation settings for Twitter. Those settings that we talked about before, there's new settings that previously, you know, when you would tweet, anybody would be able to reply to you. But now, before you tweet, you'll be presented with three options: that everybody can reply to you, only people you follow, or only people that were mentioned in the tweets. And tweets with the latter two settings will be labeled, and the reply icon will be grayed out for people who can't reply. People who can't reply will still be able to view, retweet with comments, share, and like those tweets.
I don't know how I feel about this. Like, part of me thinks this is good, but the other part of me thinks, you know what? If you say something stupid on Twitter, you got what's coming to you if you get 50 people saying you're an idiot.
Yeah, and
like, you know what I mean? Like,
and you know, when Gab was trying to get off the ground and they didn't because their CEO was, you know, a little bit too combative in my view, this was one of the features that they had. And they had this, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And if Twitter had brought this out 3 or 4 years ago, in addition with some of the other things that they would have done, they could have, I think, salvaged some of the civility on the platform of what did exist. And I say civility on Twitter very broadly, because, you know, that's hard to find.
I didn't know it was there. But okay.
Yeah. It's, I mean, what was
Well,
left?
I mean, it depends. Like, right, when I'm looking at, like, anything RuneScape, I don't see that big of a deal. But if you go to the politics, watch out.
Yeah, and the other downside is that this prevents people from having their views challenged.
See, that's what I'm saying. If you say something stupid,
it's just
going
to further reinforce those echo chambers, right?
Yes.
Which I don't like. This is overall a good change, though. I think more positives than negatives. I think I'm on record as saying the best way to fix Twitter is to have a verified only system, maybe rather than, you know, have the blue check system that we have now, but add maybe a green check as well, where anybody who wants to can pay a monthly fee. You have to send in documentation proving who you are, and then you get a green check mark showing that, you know, hey, I'm paying into this platform, I'm not going to have ads, they're not going to use my data on me, and I pledge to be what is in effect a good Twitter citizen. And if I start doing things badly, I'm going to have my account suspended with that. And it's would effectively be a way to just kind of, you know, remove the trash on the platform, so to speak, and just make it a paid service. And, you know, the reason I speak of this is because I think paid services are better than these free ones that we have out there. And I always point to my favorite bookmarking service called Pinboard. Granted, I got in before it was month-to-month pay, but I paid a one-time fee to use Pinboard. And it's exactly what you would want from a web bookmarking service without any of the garbage that took down others like Delicious or that, you know, limit things like Pocket today. So I think the paid metaphor is a good way to go, whether it be for something like Twitter or Facebook. So I think that, combined with these changes that we got this week, could vastly improve what we have on Twitter as a platform. And they ran a bit of a beta test on this, and they said these settings help some people feel safer. In particular, people say they're more comfortable tweeting and are protected from spam and abuse. Problematic repliers aren't finding another way through such as retweet with comment or unwanted direct messages. People who face abuse find these settings helpful, and those who have submitted abuse reports are 3 times more likely to use these settings. And it's a new method to block out the noise, so 60% of the people who use this during the test didn't mute or block anyone. And they feel that this could lead to more meaningful conversations. And, you know, I think we've been trying to find this ever since Twitter first appeared in 2006, and I don't know if we've found it yet, but it's here now for everyone. So, yay! I don't know. You have anything else on that one?
I mean, Twitter's Twitter.
All right. Fair enough.
What can you do?
Next piece of tech news. We covered the absolute horrendous fail of the Samsung foldable phone. Microsoft is doing it now with the Surface Duo.
Doing this, guys. Why?
I don't know.
Like, why, Microsoft? Couldn't you spend that money on something that made sense?
Well, effectively what we got here is we got a two-screen Android device. Powered, of course, by Microsoft Cloud, access to every Android app in the Google Play Store. And it's worth noting that this runs Android. It's called a Surface, of course, but it runs Android. Microsoft doesn't do its own operating system anymore on the platform. And the idea behind this is that you could have a phone, or you can put it in tablet mode for an 8.1-inch display. And I still wonder if this is a fad or if this thing will ultimately catch on.
I mean, how? Why? Why would it? I don't know. Maybe it's just something I can't think of a reason I would use it, so I just...
Like, if you watch the video here, they're largely selling it as like a multitasking thing of, say, for example, running Spotify and OneNote at the same time. But...
I just don't know. I'm not a fan, and I don't for a second think that it's not going to be like fragile like the other one was. Like,
right, and that's the thing. I mean, you can pick this up, and the fact there's a hinge on it still means that, you know, you're going to have to be careful with it as you use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, It's the ultimate in terms of a fab look, because, you know, it looks even wider than our iPhone 8 Pluses. So.
You know, I didn't get it when Samsung did it. I don't get it now.
The price is going to be $13.99 US for 128 gigs of storage. And $14.99 for 256. It will be 250 grams. Its closed width will be 145 millimeters, or in inches, that will be, for those of you guys in America, 5.8 by 3.7. Which is bigger than iPhone 8 Plus or Pixel Plus or whatever they call it. 250 grams weight, processor, you know, the best Qualcomm Snapdragon, USB-C, built-in Microsoft applications, and yada, 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 so on and so forth. I'm just trying to think of what the application for this will be, and something tells me it could be a business audience, maybe?
I mean, I guess, but... I don't know, man. I just feel like it's too easy to break. I wouldn't be comfortable with it.
Yeah, and you know, nobody has their hands on this yet because Microsoft's event was virtual, so there's no way for any journalists to handle this week. But it's launching next month. So.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see, you know, what the sales are going to be like on this, because I just can't imagine it doing too well, but I've been wrong before.
Yeah, and, you know, it could be a step to making a tablet or something like this. Who knows? Who knows? But anyways, that's it for tech news this week. Let's move on and talk about our Skill of the Month contests that are running right now. Of course, we had a choice this month with the Double XP Live going on of killing or spending money. Currently unknown Raptoid has 11.2 million XP gained in the Slayer contest. Jade Gizmo has 1.1 million XP gained. And our Herblore contest, yeah, not much action happening there because people didn't want to spend money on that front. So,
you know.
I mean,
it's pricey, you know.
Yeah, it's very pricey. I'm glad I already have 120.
And not everybody's like Shane growing his little little herb garden.
That's right. That's right. All right. But one thing we do have with Double XP Live is a boatload of achievements. So let's start on those right now. Starting off, we have Casper with 99 Herblore on August 12th. And continuing on the 12th, we have Cledio with 99 Construction, Devil Chat with 99 Prayer, Jadchor with 120 Smithing, Jammy Jenny with 99 Fletching, Mike Strike 3 with 99 Hunter, Mind with 120 Herblore, Robbie with 120 Smithing, Samurai Jack with 120 Dungeoneering, Sergeant Smart with 99 Smithing, Stinky Pete 22 with 99 Herblore, Thieves with 120 Construction, that's an expensive one, Xanthan Gum with 99 Defense, Arendelle 20 on the 11th with 99 Agility, Guy Lafleur with 99 Crafting, Lavaris with 99 Hunter and 99 Agility, Lord Gimli with 99 Construction, and Nathan also with 99 Construction all on the 11th, New Hero with 99 Slayer and 99 Ranged, Samurai Jack with 120 Farming, Siege Aurora with 99 Slayer, Balbazard got 99 Farming, Slayer, Smithing, Construction, Crafting, and Agility all on the 10th, Deltar Polo got 99 Prayer on the 10th, Dom the Mexican got 99 Fletching, Jag3Dagster with 99 Fishing, Jammy Jenny again with 99 Agility and 99 Hunter, Mike Strike 3 with 99 Construction and 99 Mining, Nathan with 99 Slayer, The Lion got 120 Crafting, and on the 9th we have Ariel with 99 Herblore, Dikey Doobie with 99 Thieving and 99 Summoning on the 9th, Doc Hawk with 99 Hunter, and Don the Mexican with 99 Strength and 99 Cooking on the 9th. Then we have Fritz Krieg with 99 Fletching also on the 9th.
Wow, that's a lot of achievements. Take a breath there, Shane. All right. Then we have Nathan with 99 Herblore on the 9th. Nathan again with 99 Farming on August 9th. Robbie with 120 Construction on August 9th. But he was putting those workbenches to good use. Robbie with another 120 Magic on August 9th. Robbie with 120, that's twice, Construction.
Huh, that's weird that came in twice. Yeah, I don't know where twice. That was.
Oh, Magic is there twice too. Okay. Moving on, we have Samurai Jack with 120 Herblore on August 9th. We have Uber Plastic with 99 Defense on the 9th. We have Corte with 99 Smithing on the 8th. And Arendelle 20 with 99 Herblore on the 8th. We also have Farox Kratos.
Yeah, I think so.
With 99 Ranged on August 8th. And then Farox Kratos with 99 Construction on the 8th. Nice Construction. Mike Strike 3 with 99 Fletching on August 8th. Nathan with 99 Divination on August 8th. Tez Toktex with 120 Farming on August 8th. Tez Toktex Rex. Rex. I'm sorry, not Tex Rex. With 120 Herblore on August 8th. Claudio?
Yeah, I think so.
Claudio with 99 Fletching on August 7th. Jammy Jenny with 99 Smithing on August 7th. Mike Strike 3 with 99 Summoning on August 7th. Mike Strike 3 with 99 Herblore on the 7th. T-Mac 187 with 99 Magic on August 7th. Fritz Krieg with 99 Crafting on August 6th. Robbie with 120 Archaeology on August 6th. Man, Robbie is busy, wasn't he? And then we have Roller Dude 540 with 99 Woodcutting August 6th.
Nicely done, everybody. And imagine we'll have more next week with that.
That's awesome. And that right there is proof that Double XP is
not disappearing.
It's not dead. No.
All right. Pick of the week time. I hijacked this one from you because this one's time limited. And okay. I wanted to get this out there because, you know, anybody who enjoys Star Trek is going to want this. This is the Star Trek Adventures RPG Humble Bundle pick. And, you know, they say you get up to $260 worth of content from this. And what you're effectively getting with this is a collection of books that you can use to effectively, you know, if you do Star Trek RPG gaming, you can use that to fill out your character experiences and your character lore and whatnot. But it's just also a good collection of data and source material about various aspects of the Star Trek universe. They have one on the Beta Quadrant. They have one on that's called These Are the Voyages, which focuses on Star Trek Adventures games and so on and so forth. They have ones that are specifically tailored to Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager, so to speak, with that. They also have a bit of a tie-in with Star Trek Online. If you play that, you get the Deep Space Nine uniform and Elite Services starter pack, just to name a few things. With that on here. And, you know, in general, it's just a good wealth of information that if you wanted to have this, if you're building, for example, a world, or if you're just a Star Trek fan and you want to have some of this stuff in book format, you can put this together. And for $20.50, you can get the entire collection, and that includes the Deep Space Nine and the Voyager section and so much more on that. And, you know, if you don't want to spend that much, there's the mid-tier as well for $11 that gets you the bulk of it, but there's even the one for just $1.35 that gets you the access to the next generation characters and the original series character and a starter set with this. And it's just a good source if you want to have it in a PDF format. Yes, they're PDF. They're not actual books, unfortunately. If you just want to have a good Star Trek source material set without going to the Memory Alpha wiki, for example. So that's the pick of the week on here with this. And cool. If you play Star Trek Online, it's probably worth it for that too.
It's interesting. I didn't know there was tabletop RPG.
There are some tabletop RPGs, but some people just do their own Star Trek D&D. And they base it off of this kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that'd be cool.
They build a character and then they, you know, if you want specific starting character stats and whatnot, those are in here too. If you wanted to do that.
Let's see.
And then there's, you know, just think of it as storytelling, built-in stories that you can kind of piggyback off of if you're doing that kind of thing. Or if you just want information about the various eras, like let's, for example, look at the Voyager preview of it. It's a 19-page PDF that contains player character statistics for the crew of the USS Voyager, and as well as game statistics for the USS Voyager and certain game rules for hologram characters and liberated Borg characters if you wanted to do that. And, you know, they do the same thing for DS9 and Next Generation and all in all the Galaxy backing info as well. So that's the pick of the week, can be found on Humble Bundle, which, you know, provides many great services out there at various points of the year if you're interested in that kind of thing. And this is available for 5 more days at the time of recording. So that's why it's pick of the week this week and not next week.
Very cool. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, time limited. I guess Humble Bundle's always like that, but boy, they got some good stuff.
Yeah.
This is cool. You know, like, I'm going to have to look into this just because the new glasses have a PDF reader built into them. So, it might be kind of neat. I usually don't mess with PDFs very much, but this actually has a narrator and everything right there for me. So
yeah.
Look into it.
And, you know, I also say for the Star Trek Online side, you get the Star Trek Online one for $11. That normally costs you $10 in-game to buy. And it's just a good starter pack for anybody who is starting the game. It includes inventory slots, bank slots, bridge officer slots, and captain retrain tokens as well. So,
cool.
All in all, good value. But what have you been up to this week?
Getting back from vacation and getting back into the like kind of swing of things. Like I said, it had its wonderful moments and it had its not so wonderful moments. Our dogs was kicked out less than 24 hours of arriving there. So that wasn't fun. but in RuneScape, I have had both guys going crazy. I was doing some cooking on the main, and I'm like, let's just go do some fishing. there's been many times this week that I have been doing stuff on Junior on the iPad and then doing something else, like fishing on my phone while watching a movie. I'm like, oh, I finally have several monitors and I can play and watch something. Yay! So, yeah, I've actually been doing a lot of that. I'm trying to get through this double XP. I may have to be putting in a lot more time than I had anticipated this weekend. Just because I'm just barely under 30 on both of them. And, I mean, it wasn't from a lack of trying, you know. I mean, I've been playing every day.
Just wait till you see what my timer's at.
Okay.
My timer is at 47:59:03.
Oh. Well.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Anything else you've been up to on RS?
That's been about it.
All right. Well, there's been a reason why that's mine. You know, we are planning to do the Everlight lore special at some point, very near in the future. And I wanted to push for 105 archaeology. And I got that now. And the basement underground portion of Everlight, it's just so amazing. You know, we saw screenshots of it, but seeing it yourself is an entirely different experience. So I'm really enjoying that and really glad that I made the push for that.
Cool.
To get that done. Currently just working on the last two mysteries there, gathering these things called mosaic pieces. Those of you guys who have done the mystery with the mosaic underwater, or sorry, in the cavern at Everlight, know exactly what I'm talking about. But, you know, I was wondering if I'd regret making a push for it rather than just, you know, letting it move naturally. But, you know, I feel fine with this. I'm glad that I did. Normally I complain when a spot, an archaeology spot, isn't really accessible with the material storage cart, but I'm not complaining here just because of how amazing this one looks.
Don't you use porters?
No, I don't use porters. The only time I used porters was at the level 95 Armadil spot and the level 104 Bando spot. That's the only time I've used porters, Tanis.
Just don't want to incur the expense or what?
I feel it detracts from how I actually play the game. And the individual, you know, core loop within archaeology itself. So.
All right. Well, fair enough.
But, you know, with that, I have been toying with a different method of archaeology training, employing my herb farming method on that. And that, you know, if I really wanted to, I could, you know, just do a few herb runs a day, and that'd be enough to pay for my archaeology materials for that. So that's one thing I am considering. But I'm actually just showing off the underwater portion of Everlight right now on mobile. Because that's the way we do things here when we're live on the show, is we use the mobile client. But I've really enjoyed the push to 105. And it's amazing that, you know, 4.5 months after the skill launch, I'm still getting stuff out of it and not bored yet. That's a testament to something that's really good design. So I'm really pleased with that. But aside from that, when it comes to double XP, I might do some dungeoneering this weekend, or I might just go and do some portable construction training. I don't know yet. I don't know. But
get working on them protein planks.
Yeah, possibly. But in addition to that, not too much else to report on here. We just spent an hour and a bit recording the monthly bit, as I mentioned, with Skater Dan from Clan Quest. Really good monthly bit. So if you are a Patreon supporter, do give that a listen. But with that being said, I think that's it for this episode of Update, unless there's anything else you want to talk about.
Nope, that's it.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe, and there you can subscribe on any podcast listener out there. Apple, Pocket Cast, Google Play, Spotify, practically anything under the sun, even YouTube. And, you know, subscribe. It helps because you get the podcast delivered automatically to you, and it also helps the ratings of the show. We're in Friends Chat Bits Bytes, and of course, full show notes can be found at update.rsbnb.com. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.